Welcome to the Senate Education and General Government Committee. For those of you who are new to our committee, I see some of you that I've never seen before. Please, I have a rule here, and it's a pretty strict rule. If you have a cell phone, a PDA, a computer, anything that makes noise, please turn it off. If we hear it, I'll ask you to make a contribution to the Common School Fund. Because it interrupts the proceedings and people testifying. And that's how we fund education in Oregon in this committee. Also, if you're here to sign up for a bill, please sign up on the table over here. I will tell you the order that we're going to take these this morning so you have some idea. We're going to open a public hearing on 472, close it, and then reopen it again later in the hearing. We'll open a public hearing on 1042 and then finish that one out, and then we will go into...
Then we're going to go back to 472.
We're going to go back to 472, then we're going to go to 462, and we have 1 hour for that. No more. Less is good, but no more than an hour. And then we'll hear 378 if we have time. If not, we'll hold that over till Thursday. So, that being said, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill... Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. We've got a work session. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 664.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 664 be reported out without recommendation and be returned to the Senate President for referral to the Senate Committee on Rules.
Great. This is like getting married. I have to read this. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 664 be reported out without recommendation and be returned to the Senate President for referral to the Senate Committee on Rules. Any discussion? We're just moving that bill so it stays alive in some other committee other than our own. Hearing none. Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Okay. Now, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 472. Ms. Richardson, please tell us about that bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 472 appropriates monies for the Mount Hood Community College Child Development Center. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Two of our esteemed colleagues are with us this morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Senator Lori Monis Anderson from the Greshamwood Village, Fairview, and Troutdale area. I'm so delighted that you have decided to hear this bill. As you know, there are three bills that concern capital construction projects. House Bill 3345 and Senate Bill 5516. And I believe at least one of them is in Ways and Means. The reason the contingency in the Mount Hood Community College decided that we needed this bill is because we were not on the capital construction list, the community college capital construction rank order list. The governor had cut out Mount Hood Community College. And there are a number of factors that probably Senator Monroe can describe that to you, but it was because we had it in our bond. Our bond was not passed, and therefore we at that point in time did not think that we had matching dollars, and so we were taken off the list. Right as of now, we have the matching dollars, and we want to make sure that we are back on the list. There are other bills that Representative Hunt introduced that would put us back on the list. This is just another bill that makes sure it gets down in Ways and Means, because in Ways and Means we aren't sure what's going to happen, and we're the only college at this point in time that has the matching dollars, and so that's why we are going forward, and we would love for the committee to send this to Ways and Means. And we have other people to really talk to you about the value of a child development center. The need to fund the replacement center is of vital importance, as evidenced by the resolution that you see attached to the bill that you have. It plays a critical role in the lives of the Mount Hood Community College students and community members whose children are enrolled in that in that facility. A majority of them are Head Start eligible, and also the current center was never intended to exist as a permanent structure. And only through constant attention by the college's maintenance and center staff has it lasted for 30 years. And funds to replace the Child Development Center were included in a general obligation bond measure that was defeated by our district voters last November. And we were so wanting to have that bond passed, but it did not, and no other community college passed their bonds either. So those are just the preliminary statements that I want to make, and I know that Senator Monroe would have some. And then we do have some students and the president of Mountain Community College here also.
Okay. Senator Montes Anderson, you indicated the bond has now passed. It failed, but you've repassed it?
No, we
well,
found
where'd you get the matching funds?
We got, again, Senator Monroe is on the board.
He's the money guy. He'll tell us about that.
So he'll talk about that.
Okay. I was wondering what magic pot of gold. Did you guys find something at the end of the rainbow?
Thank you, Senator Walker. Rod Monroe, Senate District 24, and a member, elected member of the Mount Hood Community College Board. It goes something like this. We had a capital project in our bond that was a much larger project, about a $16 million project. And also the Child Development Center project, which is much smaller. It's a total of $5 million, $2.5 million from the state, $2.5 million local match. After the bond was defeated, the board determined that our number one priority was funding the Child Development Center. The current center houses about 90 children, and that number is going to decline even if they allow us to keep it open. And believe me, it's hung together with baling wire and duct tape. Literally, if you throw two switches at the same time, the circuit breaker blows. These are old. They were old modular buildings 35 years ago, and they're 35 years older now. So we've been very fortunate that they haven't closed us down, and that we've been able to continue to serve. The federal government, though, is changing the rules on square footage per pupil, and so even if we're allowed to keep this open, we'll be able to serve, I think, about 15 fewer students than what we've been serving. This is an opportunity for mostly single parents to get an education. If they do not have their child care provided, they cannot afford to go to school. Child care costs between $600 and $1,000 per month, and it really is the difference between education or minimum wage jobs, welfare, whatever, for the rest of their lives. So it's huge. The new center will cost $5 million. We have identified the $2.5 million match. The board put that together and checked with our bond counsel, and it is in place. And we're the only school, the only community college I understand, that has their total match in place. Most of the other community colleges are relying on passing a bond for their local match. We do not rely on that. We have the match in place. This new facility will allow us to serve up to 240 mostly Head Start students, and that means 240 single parents will be able to get an education and lift themselves up to a skilled job, a family wage job, rather than, you know, a minimum wage type opportunity. This is a critical project. It is my personal number one priority in this session of the legislature. And I have talked to the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Representative Galizio is very favorable toward this project. I feel very good about the opportunity to get it funded through the capital construction. I'm trying to get the capital construction boosted a bit, too, but the fact that we have our match already in place, the fact that we were fourth on the list when we got bumped, and, you know, the fact that the cost of this project is fairly small compared to the cost of other capital projects leads me to believe that it will be funded. But your action in sending this bill down to Ways and Means and your support for this project will be very helpful.
Okay. Representative Lim is here also. Do you want to come forward and join your counterparts here?
Thank you, David.
And as you know, Senator Monroe, Senator Morse, and I serve on that subcommittee, and we're all a little bit, how should I put it delicately? I guess I won't put it delicately at all. We're all a little chagrined about the budget for capital construction, and there aren't any votes to move any of those budgets right now. So hopefully we will get it all worked out, and we can move this down there. We can put it as part of the list. Representative Lim, you wanted to talk about this bill today?
If you give me the opportunity,
okay.
I'll do so.
All right.
And Madam Chair Walker and members of the committee, good morning. And I'm very happy to come before you to testify on that Senate Bill 472. I'm sure.
And you will, I'm sure you will state your name for the record.
Okay, I think I do have my name, John Lim, state representative from the District 50, which is Gresham area. Mount Hood Community College, just right in my district, and I'm sure two eloquent senators already spoken on this issue, the needs, but I just want to add that the Mount Hood Community College, currently we have 24,000 students in our district, one of the largest in our state. And then this Mount Hood Community College is the educational center in East Montgomery County, a student coming from all over, even though it's located in Gresham area. As you may know, that the governor's one of the priority is early childhood education. And then this is that the core center for the student when they go to the college, they can leave their children at this child care center so they can continue their study and find a good job. And then that already is mentioned, this facility is old, outdated, and we need a new facility. And then with this, we shall be able to advance the education for the older generation and including young in the future. So with that, I'd like to have your strong support on this Senate Bill 472. I just want to also recognize the my good friend, the president of the Bob of Silverman, sitting in that behind us. Thank you very much, Madam.
Thank you. And we will hear from the president in a little bit. Senator Monis Anderson has to scoot off to another committee, so we're going to close this public hearing, let her testify on the next bill, and then we'll come back to it. Any questions from the committee? Senator Morse?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill, and I guess maybe Senator Monroe, the bill addresses transferring $4 million from the general fund, which you're suggesting as we amend this, to $2.5 million from the capital construction?
Yes, from the capital construction that is lottery-based, and, of course, we're still trying to determine what the total aggregate amount will be in that lottery-backed capital bond. the governor's recommendation, I think, was some $80 million. We need $2.5 million.
So we need to amend the bill then to move it.
Well, we could, or we could. Yeah, we could. We have to.
It's not reflecting the intent of the
request. No. Suddenly Thursday is becoming this enormous day, and we were scheduled. We're going to start at 7:30, and we just may end up starting even earlier, so be prepared.
Madam Chair?
Uh-huh.
Amending it would be best, but I know the timeline is very short. Would it be possible for you to send the bill to Ways and Means with a letter stating that you support the project, but that funding could come from other sources if the Ways and Means Committee finds it to be best?
What do you think? We're on the committee. We're not in work session, so we'll talk about that one. but that's a good suggestion, Senator Monroe. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to, Senator Monis Anderson, you can stay put. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 472. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1042. And thank you, gentlemen, for coming.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1042 prohibits siting a casino in an incorporated city unless the city electors approve. This exempts tribal casinos, declares an emergency, and would take effect upon passage. We have two amendments before us that came in this morning. Shall I speak to those?
Yes, please.
The -1 amendments requires the electors in the cities that are adjacent to the city where the casino would be located to approve of the casino siting. That's the -1s. The -2s, which just came through, had to the definition of tribal casinos those that are conducted in accordance with the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act and federal regulations.
Okay, Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Mona Sanderson from the Gresham Fairview Wood Village and Troutdale area. I'm delighted that you have decided to hear my priority bill, Senate Bill 1042. It came about very interestingly. I was talking to some members of Fairview, and they were saying, you know, there's this casino that's going to be coming, that's going to get on the ballot. They're going to there are going to be two initiatives. And if approved, one initiative would amend the state constitution to allow one casino on non-tribal land. And such a casino would be the first in Oregon's history. And the other ballot measure spells out the revenue distribution. And the people in Fairview were saying, you know, here we're going to go to a statewide ballot initiative on a tribal on a casino that's going to be located basically in Wood Village. And why does someone in another part of the state have the ability to determine that a casino can be sited in our community? And so I decided to go to Ledge Council, and what you have now before you is Senate Bill 1042, which I think is a very reasonable solution to part of the problem of locating a casino off tribal lands, and that is that it would allow where the casino would be sited, allow those electors to decide whether they would want to have one put there or not. The backers of the initiative say turning the former Multnomah County Kennel Club into a casino and entertainment mecca, as they call it, would bring thousands of jobs to East County and millions in tax money to schools. And they're going to have a high-end hotel, live music theater, restaurants and retail, bowling alley, spa, and a water park. And it would keep tax dollars in Oregon as opposed to flowing into Washington, where a mega casino may be built in La Center. I think we also have to remember, though, that there are plans of one a casino possibly in Cascade Locks. Also, we have other casinos in the state of Oregon. Opponents, including Fairview Mayor Mike Weatherby, who is here today, contends that traffic jams and other negative impacts from the entertainment complex would significantly affect local residents' lifestyle. And they also question the appropriateness of Oregonians hundreds of miles away voting for something with strictly local impact. And with that, I would really like the mayor to come forward and...
Yes, why don't you just come up while you're
and
here.
And he has an excellent testimony. I believe the police chief's here and the attorney for the city of Fairview. And has maps, and we'll give you a pretty good. We just got received the Dash 1 amendment. they will two Dash 1s.
We have a Dash 1 and a Dash 2.
I haven't seen the Dash 2.
You haven't seen the Dash 2. Ms. Gravel can get you a copy of the Dash 2.
Okay.
So let me be clear. Right now, the Oregon Constitution doesn't allow casinos off of tribal land. In fact, non-tribal casinos are not allowed, and someone thinks we should turn Oregon into a Las Vegas. You asked me to be a co-chief sponsor on the bill, which is a good thing because I do not support statewide gambling. And my daughter lives in Las Vegas, and it can stay in Las Vegas. If people want to gamble to that level, there are gambling machines everywhere you go, stores, offices, everywhere you go. There's smoking. Well, not now. They passed a law in Nevada that's being challenged, but I don't support statewide gambling. So I'm so glad to be a sponsor on this bill with you, and I'll be delighted to hear from your mayor and your other folks. So I just laid it out there for you. You know where I'm at on this bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Walker and committee members. For the record, I'm Mike Weatherby, Mayor of Fairview. And with me are Joseph Gall, our City Administrator, Ken Johnson, who is our Police Chief, and Chris Crean from the City's Law Firm of Barry, Ellison, and Hammond. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. My mentor, Franklin Roosevelt, was asked by his oldest son, Dad, what makes a great speech? And he said, three things. Be sincere, be brief, be seated. So I think I'm partially there. Now, I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1042. This bill provides an important and critical voice for the residents of any Oregon jurisdiction that may have a private casino proposed within their community. I believe this bill is truly consistent with a long tradition within Oregon of local control over local land use decisions. While I am supportive of this bill, I'm also here to state for the record that I do not believe it goes quite far enough. Cities that are adjacent to any city that has a proposed private casino within their boundaries can also be significantly impacted by such a private casino, and Fairview is a model for that issue.
And that's why you would support the Dash 1 amendment.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Although this proposed bill has potential ramifications statewide, I would like to use the proposed private casino at Multnomah Kennel Club as an example. As the committee chair and members may know, and I won't go into the details because you're already aware of what this issue is, there is a map in the packet that shows how this is affected. And within 1,000 feet of the casino, there are two cities. In fact, we believe there are more residents within the city of Fairview within 1,000 feet than within the city of Wood Village. And yet, Fairview would have no voice in this issue. The other major issue is you see that on map two, there's two major transportation routes that serve this proposed casino. And we believe that the majority of the traffic coming to the casino will be coming from the Portland metropolitan area. Therefore, they'll be taking the Fairview Parkway exit and most likely heading due east on Halsey Street. Now, we already have a city divided by I-84. And Fairview decided some time ago when the county asked to have Halsey widen the four lanes, no. We do not want our city divided by a major thoroughfare. We kept it to three lanes. And with the increased traffic, there is just no good solution to this issue. It is divisive to our city, and it really is going to hurt our community. And that's just one aspect that will. So I'm here as the mayor of the city of Fairview to state emphatically that I believe the opinions of my citizens should count as well in the decision-making process of approving this first private casino. I would respectfully request the committee consider approval of this bill with the amendments, taking into account the voices and concerns of adjacent communities that would be impacted by this decision. And I guess one of the reasons I'm here is not just as mayor of this city, because I happen to be, I guess, the major opponent of this casino. I see nothing but negative side effects to our community.
Mayor Weatherby, is this a NIMBY argument, or are you opposed to non-tribal casinos?
I'm opposed to having this non-private casino in Wood Village and the damage it would do to our community. It isn't just in our backyard. This isn't just an issue of, I don't like gambling at all. This is an issue of how much this would impact traffic, the quality of life, the potential for added crime, the arguments go on and on. And I don't see any good that this is, there are all sorts of other issues. They offer the incentive, if you go to their website, of how this is going to bring, they have 3% that they've talked about giving to the small cities. If you really read it, and our legal counsel has said that this is some of the poorest draft legislation they've ever seen, initiative they've ever seen, because literally the money just disappears. It would be that the gaming commission, whoever that they would be imposed, could decide we get nothing from it. And we would suffer all the social ills and all the other ills that could befall us and have absolutely no say-so in this.
Well, the reason I ask that is, in case it does make it to the ballot, I would hope that you would sign on as a person writing an argument opposed to the measure.
Absolutely.
Good.
You can depend on it.
I'll look forward to it.
I'll be in the forefront of the opposition.
Thank you. So this is a proactive measure in the event we pass some silly constitutional measure like that.
Yeah, but Madam Chair, clearly if there is an initiative, it's got to be constitutional. Wouldn't that trump this?
No, it would not, because this would say that if the constitutional measure passes, that we would have a non-tribal casino. This simply says if you do that, then it has to be.
I suppose it depends on how the.
It depends on how it's written.
How it's written.
Yeah, you're
saying. I mean,
right.
Theoretically, it could be written site-specific as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is.
It is written mm-hmm. site-specific.
It's already been filed.
Okay.
It's the only place. In fact, it mandates that no other private casinos can go in except for this one. It gives them a monopoly. Very sweet.
Well, Madam Chair, I seriously think that an initiative like that would not necessarily fare well on the ballot, even for those who don't live in there. Most of my constituents are not fans of gambling, so.
Well, they have a little bribe. If you go to their website, there's a tab you can go to and type in your school district, and it shows how much money you're going to get.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Sweet.
Yeah, Senator Metzger has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just ask a couple other questions. More philosophically, I mean, if we move off the issue of the casino, which is, of course, what has drawn you here and the bill, but look at, because you're looking at impacts on the city, et cetera, and its citizens, there are those who would suggest that that same philosophy should be extended further. My mom lives in Gresham. She would love to be able to prevent the city of Gresham from allowing a Walmart. Do you think it would be proper that the legislation should require that, say, the city of Fairview require a vote for any Fred Meyer or any other commercial or industrial development that you might want to do, as opposed to having the city make and planning department make those decisions? I mean, I'm just trying to get philosophically why the casino and why some other development where maybe some residents might think it's going to impact them and they have no choice to, but should we allow them also to vote for all commercial and industrial development in the cities and have the other cities agree with you?
I understand what you're saying, Senator, and I appreciate the question. This is something that's really radical. This isn't a Walmart or Fred Meyer's. This is the first private casino in Oregon that's being proposed. It is the first one in a major metropolitan area. This is the first one that is being proposed that will supersede all land use laws and all local jurisdictions and the interests that they have. This is something that involves not shopping or business. This involves gambling. This involves you don't have social ills. You don't have, for instance, in gambling. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that it has to happen, but you see a lot of alcohol use. So therefore, you have the issue of, for instance, the possible DUIs. And with the consumption of alcohol. Well, you don't have that at Walmart or Fred Meyer's. Not usually. So there, I think that this is a whole different aspect and perspective. And I think it would be totally different to try and get into land use regarding private industry. And this is something that's totally different. And this is really going to be a scar on our community and nothing to be proud of at all.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gale?
Actually, I don't have anything unless there are questions. So
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I think we've got Ken Johnson and Justin Martin. Was there anyone else? This must be Mr. Johnson. He's wearing a badge.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm really just here if there were any questions and to just come from a little bit different perspective, not as pro or opposed to a casino.
Okay.
Simply about the significant impact that it would have on our jurisdiction, which the street in front of it, literally you can throw a rock from the casino and impact Fairview. The street in front of the casino is divided right down the middle, half Fairview, half Wood Village.
Mm-hmm.
And it will have a significant impact on a small department. I have 13 officers. It would take us a year or two to ramp up once the casino was placed there. And simply I suggest to you that this bill, the Amendment Dash 1, would give the citizens of our community an opportunity to have a voice and whether they, how they feel about that impact on their community and the level of service that they'd like the police department to provide to them in public safety.
Okay. Thank you. And I assume that the mayor's comment about alcohol use and DUIs has you very concerned.
Yes, very concerned.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Martin, you want to come up? Thanks for coming out today.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. I will be brief today in asking for your support of Senate Bill 1042. While this bill does not directly affect tribal casinos, we, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, agree with Oregonians that changing the Oregon Constitution and allowing private casinos is not a good idea. I'd like to touch on three things real quickly. Gambling in Oregon, a quick overview, casino policy in Oregon currently, and finally, the process and how this bill would make that process even stronger in terms of communicating with local communities. Right now, when Oregonians are asked if there's the right amount of gambling, too much gambling, not enough gambling, the numbers come out as follows. About 46% of Oregonians say that gambling currently is just right. About 35% think that there are too many gambling opportunities in the state, and just over 1 in 10, 11%, believes that there are too few. Oregonians certainly are not clamoring for more gambling opportunities. Currently, the casino policy in Oregon is that non-tribal casinos are forbidden by the Oregon Constitution. So a lot of what we're talking about here today is what if. And we did hear in earlier testimony, what if this were to happen? We have certainly looked at the possibilities of this in public opinion research. And while the possibilities aren't quite there today, we have seen measures and efforts to sweeten the pot, so to speak. As was mentioned earlier, you look at what this could bring for your school district. What could this bring for the city? What could this bring for the community? All kind of trying to sweeten the pot. In terms of that, we think that's a bad road to go down, and Oregonians certainly feel the same way. In terms of tribal gaming in Oregon, the historic policy was one casino per tribe on reservation lands. Now, we have recently seen several attempts, and it has become such a serious issue in terms of off-reservation gaming that even Congress is looking at not allowing off-reservation gaming. But we've seen three specific proposals here in Oregon. Unfortunately, because of that and because of what can be viewed as a change in Oregon's policy, we're starting to create some ambiguity. Ambiguity in terms of what the private interests and, in this case, out-of-state interests see as a question that says, well, now that tribal gaming is moving off reservation, why shouldn't Oregon benefit in that? Why shouldn't Oregon citizens receive some of those benefits? We think that's a very slippery slope. That's why we have and always will support the policy of one casino per tribe on reservation lands. Finally, in terms of process, all nine tribes in Oregon have worked very hard with the communities in which they operate and the communities in which they employ members. And we think that should be the same situation if and when Oregonians ever choose to go down the road to allow private gambling. This bill creates a stronger process that, again, brings communities to the table so they can also participate in that process and have a say in what would really be a tremendous impact upon those communities. The bottom line is that, again, Oregonians are not clamoring for more gambling opportunities. Senate Bill 1042 ensures that private interest and, again, out-of-state investors cannot come into Oregon, change our Constitution, and locate casinos wherever they want. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in front of you today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Of the nine tribes, how many of them have casinos currently?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, all nine now have casinos. The latest to come on board was Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw.
I think one of them is in Senator Cruz's district.
A couple of them.
You have two? Right. So let me ask you the second question. This would economically impact the tribes, would it not, if there was non-tribal gaming that was beyond the Oregon lottery?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. Not only would we see individual impacts on markets where casinos are currently located now, but we also have to look at the impact in an initiative campaign. There has also been an alliance formed, which I'm proud to represent as an association manager of the Oregon Tribal Gaming Alliance, in which all nine tribes look specifically at this issue and other gaming issues throughout the state. And unfortunately, if out-of-state interests come in and decide to take a gamble in Oregon, a low-bar state in terms of getting signatures and getting on the ballot and having a campaign, tribal dollars, as well as other concerned citizens around the state, will have to be put in to fight that campaign. And unfortunately, the dollars that we see through tribal gaming 100% go back to the tribes themselves, programs like health, education, housing, elder pensions. And to see some of those dollars diverted just to fight out-of-state interests who want to come in and again take a gamble on Oregon, I think is a true injustice and a real shame.
Thank you. My final question, then, of the nine tribes, all of them have casinos, I would say, would you agree, all nine of them give back to their community financially?
Madam Chair, members of the community, yes. Another part of the Tribal Gaming Alliance is looking at also getting all our foundations together and truly looking at the impact that tribal gaming has had on communities around Oregon, not just in terms of economics, not just in terms of jobs and wages and salary and taxes that they generate, but also what have tribes been able to give back. And six of the nine tribes here in Oregon were terminated, had to go through extensive processes to get restored on the federal level, and also work with their communities to build those relationships to get back to where they were originally. And through that, several foundations have been created. Our foundation in Grand Ronde is fast approaching our 40 millionth dollar that we've returned to charitable and nonprofits throughout the state, and tribes are doing wonderful things. Again, in a totally different environment in terms of gambling. These are entertainment experiences. The nearest one is Senator Cruz, 45 minutes from Roseburg. Grand Ronde's 70 miles southwest of Portland. You have to want to get in your car and go to these facilities. Really a truly different experience, an entertainment experience versus a convenience gambling experience, which we currently find with the state lottery.
Well,
these sound like destination resorts, Madam Chair.
Yes, they are, with a great purpose, however. All right, thank you, Mr. Martin. I see no other questions from the committee and no other folks signed up to testify. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1042. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1042, excuse me.
You want the ones and twos?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
We do need the ones and twos. Senator Monis Anderson, both dash one and dash two, correct? Yes.
I have the dash 27s that put a casino in the Metolius Basin. I'd like to introduce those.
Senator Westland, I think that one will be not entertained today. You can roll the dice somewhere else.
You might want to go for a 28 and put one in Tumalong.
Let's not roll the dice on the Metolius, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 1 minute to Senate Bill 1042.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1042. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1042.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1042. Any objection? Any discussion? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1042 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1042 now as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Metzger, we've just put in the dash 1 and dash 2s, and now we're at the full bill. Any further discussion? Hearing none, take the roll, please, Ms. Gravel.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator
Westheim?
Aye.
Vice
Chancellor?
Aye.
Senator Hunter? Aye. Senate Bill 1042, receive the constitutional majority, is passed. Senator Monis Anderson, you may carry that. You're welcome. Thank you. We'll close the work session, and we will go back to Senate Bill 472 and open the public hearing, reopen the public hearing. We have Bob Silverman, Sean Robinson, and Ryan Fitzgerald, and those are our only witnesses, so we should be able to finish this one up. And then we will move into the Canyonville School District bill. Welcome, gentlemen. Somebody start. State your name for the record, please.
Why don't I start? Senator Walker, Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Bob Silverman. I've been in front of you several times, so I'm back again.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you. And I want you to forgive my hands. My pen broke on the way down here in the car, so my hands look a little strange.
I hope you didn't get it on your suit.
I hope not to.
It'll be a difficult job for the
dry cleaner. Why you have a blue suit?
Sheriff, excuse me, but I mean, what were you doing utilizing a writing device while driving, Mr. President?
Mr. Senator, Ms. Chair, I tell you the truth. You want to hear this, really? You really do.
After you put your name on the record, we do.
No, I was hoping to put the name on the record after the story. Anyway, for the record, my name is Robert Silverman, Bob Silverman, President of Mount Hood Community College, and I have a center console in my car. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I had a pen sitting there. And I was reaching down for a quarter so that I could make my donation out here on the street. And there's a pool of ink at the bottom of this thing. And so my hand was in there looking for a quarter and found the ink. So I wasn't using the pen. I really wasn't, sir. You'd probably call the state patrol on me. Anyway, let's get beyond that.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate the question,
yes,
sir. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to support our legislative group that was here earlier and support of our Child Development Center. It is a necessity for the college in the future because of the regulations they mentioned and because of certain inadequacies of the building. The odds are that the facility will close between a year and a half from now. And we've done a survey of the community. There is no other place for these children, the child care students, children to go. Also, we do not have the ability to maintain our program. It'll eliminate our child development program, probably. So it's critical to the college and critical to the community. As they mentioned before, we do have our match. And in addition to that, because of our close association with the Head Start program, and working together with them, the Head Start program will help us operate the center. It's hard in the state to get a building built and not be able to operate it. And so because of the federal monies that will come and other donations, we feel we'll have great opportunities to operate it effectively and efficiently and maintain it. So, again, I'm here to answer any questions, probably. It's more appropriate. I've given you a handout. I think you've had several. But if there's anything else I can say, I guess I'm here for questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President. We appreciate it. Senator Morse has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very, very briefly, if you could recap the process of why this project did not get on the community college list, and I guess my question behind that is, was this a part of that prioritization process that the community colleges have gone through?
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Morse, it's sort of a tough question. The first one, I think, was that you were asking why it wasn't on the list in the end. It had gone through the process, and I'm not sure why it wasn't on the list. It was number four ranked in the process as part of a larger project. And the larger project would have been a $7 million from the state, $7 million match. When we were left off the list, then we were able to redefine the project to something much smaller, which is the $2.5 million on either side. But it did go through the process, and it was ranked number four. Why it didn't make the list is, I always think I can't explain politics, so I don't know. But it was left off. The answer, the question, was that we had not passed our bond and that we didn't have the match money. Well, by being able to redefine it into a smaller amount, which is what we're doing right now, we do have the match, and so we're able to do it. Does that answer it? Is that enough?
Thank you. I don't want to belabor this, Madam Chair, but my question more specifically is, you're not on the governor's recommended list, but you were on the community college list, but it just didn't get transferred. Is that what happened?
Madam Chair and Senator Morse, I hesitate to even postulate about why it didn't get on the list. It was on the community college list. It went to the state board. The state board endorsed it. It was sent to the governor's office for consideration. And when the list came out, three of the projects on the list were left off.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
One of them was Klamath Community College, which I have an affinity for because I go to Klamath Falls every couple of months and have for the last 24 years.
Yeah, we were both. The only difference, Madam Chair, was that we were number four and they were
number 17.
Right. So being number four, sort of, I don't understand it myself. I never try to second guess decisions. But
all right.
It's kind of like us trying to understand how he got ink on his hand reaching for a four.
Look, I thought I explained that well.
I used that one too, Bob,
but you know.
All right, we have next Sean or Ryan, whoever is whom.
Sean.
Okay, Sean, why don't you go first?
My name is Sean Robinson. I'm a student at Mount Hood Community College. I'm speaking on behalf of numerous student parents that are unable to come due to class or working conflicts. But at our school, you can see the child care facilities from about 10 or 15 yards away, and you can quickly identify the problems that you can see with this structure. When our school opened over about 40 years ago, these facilities were utilized to give education to students at Multnomah County so that we were building our regular buildings, which we now occupy. And these facilities, these trailer module structures, have survived for 40 years with lots of little people and students running around inside of them. So they've been well used and attempted to be maintained throughout these years. But what we're looking at now is the facility is simply falling apart, and it's really easy to identify these. But what it gives back to the students is what we want to look at, and the cheap rates that it offers as far as affordable health care for students is really what I am trying to urge you to support this bill on. If this child care facility goes, we're looking at students are going to be forced to pay for health care or child care for their children at the current average rates, about $800 a week in the state of Oregon. In fact, and I include this, and I'll hand it to the assistant in a second, but there was a USA Today report on April 18, 2006 that stated that for the state of Oregon, identify all the states throughout the United States, that the median single parent is estimated to pay 26% of their income, their net income on child care, or 8.2% for a joint household. And you look in that from the aspect of a student, that's a significant contribution that to pay for this and going for tuition and paying for food and utilities and rent and all these things. So I urge you to support this bill so that we can increase the capability we can provide to our students and assist our single parents as far as them maintaining their ability to go to school, ensure that they stay in school a limited amount of time that is necessary so they don't have to prolong their experience and thus limit their income they can contribute to their children. So I urge you to support this bill. And I have a petition here of students that have signed off, 172 students that I'll hand afterwards.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ryan Fitzgerald. I'm a first-year student at Mount Hood Community College. My son will turn two on June 2nd. I'm a single parent. I've got sole custody of my son. I'm here to talk to you about, as a parent, I juggle my schedule, my work schedule, and trying to find daycare for him on a daily basis. I went to the Child Development Center last fall when I started school. They told me that there's a waiting list of about a year. The Child Development Center has space, they said, for 90 children. And even with that capacity, the need continues to grow. They explained that how the facilities are at the end of their lifespan due to the dry rot, the leaking roofs, and the fact that they weren't designed to last as long as they already have. The director of the Child Care Development Center mentioned that if our bond measure passes, which was last fall, that we'd be able to rebuild the Child Care Development Center to a larger capacity with updated facilities to serve both the parents of Mount Hood Community College and the students that use the center as a classroom. The bond measure failed, as you guys I'm sure know by now. Other avenues have failed. It's reached a point where we have no place else to turn. I'd urge you to pass this bill. Passing it would mark a milestone for Oregon, for community colleges, and for the student parents of the state. I've come to Salem quite a few times to advocate for the bill, and over again, and we've basically got no place else to turn. There's a lot of parents that use the center that wouldn't be able to afford daycare elsewhere. Like you were saying, it's about $600, $600 to $800 a month for daycare at a conventional daycare. Students' rates are about $80 a week, which is considerably cheaper and allows them to go to school and be a parent at the same time, which there's a lot of parents in the state that want to go to school. So
Okay. It's
basically just urging you to pass it because I can't afford conventional daycare. If I was able to get into the daycare center, which with the updated facilities, with the expanded enrollment that they allow more students in, I'd be able to afford daycare and be able to go to school there. So as it is, I miss classes sometimes because I can't have daycare for my son. So I miss classes probably once every 2 weeks. I got to miss a class because I can't find somebody to watch it. So it's kind of hard.
Mr. Fitzgerald, I admire you and Mr. Robinson both, and I can't imagine raising a 2-year-old on my own. I had a husband to help me with that because it was frustrating at times.
Yeah.
And you're right. If they get sick or whatever, you've got to drop everything and take care of your children. That's the important thing. All right. Well, thank you. Any questions from the committee?
We're going to go on right now.
Right. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate you coming.
We'll
close the public hearing on Senate Bill 472. I'm going to open up a work session. Senator Cruz, you have a plan.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 472 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference without recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 472 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference without recommendation. Do you need to speak to that?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I toured the facilities with Senator Mona Sanderson when her committee was at Mount Hood Community College, and I understand the need here, but there's a couple real big issues here. Number one is the general underfunding of community colleges, and number two is we have a significant issue with the capital side as well, as to even if we fund that at this point in time. I would also point out, Madam Chair, that the Ways and Means Committee does have the ability to relook at the priority list submitted by community colleges and reprioritize as they see fit, and they are not tied to the governor's recommended. This was number 4 on the list. I think it is appropriate that it be funded if indeed the co-chairs see fit to put money into the capital side for community colleges. Bigger discussion, and hopefully we get some positive resolution for that. So I think it's appropriate that we send this bill specifically because it is on the list, just to shine the light on it. But also, I think there's a bigger discussion about capital construction funding that will take place, and by sending this bill, we will help inform that discussion.
Great, and I do think sending it out without recommendation addresses the concern of Senator Morris that the bill says one thing and they're asking for another, and that way we don't have to wait for an amendment. Does that agree with you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I endorse the amendment, but I also believe that it would be helpful in the Ways and Means process if we had a letter that accompanied this that explained why this special process is taking place that gives the benefit of the testimony of Senator Monroe, and he might be willing to actually just craft a letter of explanation that we can attach with it that goes to the committee. So at least the benefit of this discussion is carried forward.
I'm happy to do that if the committee agrees. Okay. We'll ask Ms. Richardson to work with Senator Monroe, and we'll put together a letter. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. So, hearing none, Ms. Gravel, you want to call the roll?
Senator Metzen?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 472 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you. Okay, now the big shoe, the really big shoe. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 462. And we've got 1 hour for this hearing. So, Ms. Richardson, what do you think?
Well, Madam Chair, Senate Bill 462 divides the South Umpqua School District number 19 into two districts under certain circumstances. It provides for distribution of property, assets, and liabilities to the newly created district. Declares an emergency and will take effect upon passage. We have a dash one in front of us as well. Shall I speak to that?
Yes, I think that's the one we're going to be working from.
Yeah, it's a gutting stuff.
It is a gutting stuff.
Okay.
It allows the division of the South Umpqua School District into two districts by petition. It modifies the petition filing dates from the original bill. It requires the appointment of a group to consider whether district division should be submitted to the electors of the district, the conversion of this new school to a charter school, and other alternatives for operation of the new district. It provides dividing the district... prohibits dividing the district unless submitted to electors. It requires the appointed group, if division occurs, to negotiate and decide distribution of the assets and liabilities. It provides for membership in the new school district board of directors, declares an emergency, and will take effect upon passage.
Okay, great. I'm going to have Senator Cruz speak to his amendment, and then we'll have Representative Morgan come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first off, I want to thank Cindy Hunt, who does very good work for putting this amendment together in a very short period of time and doing it based off of about a 15-minute conversation I had with her. But having said that, Madam Chair, I think there are issues in the dash one that need to be dealt with. I am proposing, at this point, basically, Madam Chair, I want to let the testimony inform part of where we go with amendments, but my commitment at this point in time is I'll get with Cindy, and hopefully we can have a dash two by Thursday, which is our last day to do this sort of thing. So, I mean, there are just some issues about actually having specific percentages and things like that, and the way we prove up assets and liabilities, that I think is not as clear and distinct as here in here as need to be. So I want to have a chance to revisit those issues and maybe put some more clarification and definition in this bill.
Okay. All right. Representative Morgan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, for the opportunity to be here and testify to you today. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan, and I'm a state representative from House District 2. This is, as you're going to find out, a very divisive local issue. There is a high level of motion on many sides in this debate, and there are far more than two sides in this debate. My experience is that there are good, thoughtful, well-meaning people on all sides of this issue that have weighed in. Like a lot of local issues that we're asked to deal with in this process, there's not a lot of stipulated facts here. There's a lot of inaccurate information floating around. And I've spent many hours talking to many people. This is part of my legislative district. This is the school district that my children attended school in. And these are my friends and my neighbors and my family. These are people that I care very deeply about. There is no clear solution to this problem. And I'll give you the essence of what I see happening here, rightly or wrongly, and this is my estimation of the situation. South Umpqua School District consolidated the high school into one site a long time ago, about 40 years ago. For the last 20 years, this has been a declining enrollment school district. So every year they come in and try to do the budget, they work with less money because they have less students that they have the funding coming to them for. They have very aging buildings. Some of the buildings I'm sure you'll get more information about that. Very difficult problems around maintenance of the buildings in the district. The district itself has low property values. This is not an affluent part of the state. There are many retirees there and many people on fixed income. The last construction levy that the district passed was in the 80s when my children were in elementary school there, and it was a levy that built a multi-purpose room at the elementary school in Myrtle Creek. The district recently attempted to grapple with the issue of declining enrollment and failing buildings and put a levy out that ultimately failed by a high margin for many, many reasons. Canyonville residents feel that as the school district went through that process to decide what the levy should look like, that their needs weren't taken into consideration, and they didn't play a significant role in the formation of the plan, that their needs were not met by the plan, that they were disrespected by the process of forming the plan, and there is a great deal of anger in that part of the district right now. One of the very difficult things about this is to separate the emotion from the discussion and focus on what is the best thing to do for the children of Canyonville. And with that, I would ask Ms. Gravel to hand out you have in your hands a spreadsheet, a document that looks like this. What I've been trying to do is to get the people in this discussion to focus on the numbers. And this spreadsheet is the first opportunity that we've had to have that discussion. On the left side of the spreadsheet, in the black printing, is the first look at a pro forma for a Canyonville district. And this information was put forward by the folks in Canyonville. To the right side of this, you see pink numbers and red numbers, and that is feedback from the business agent of the South Umpqua School District about what the Canyonville people have put forward. I would ask you, as you listen to the testimony today, to focus down about halfway down the page. There's a part of this called expenditures, and if you look over to the column of black printing in the middle, the header says staff FTE, and you can look down and see what the proposal is in terms of creating a school district here. You're looking at a school district that has 5 primary teachers. You have a middle school made up of 4.5 teachers, a high school with 5 teachers in it. This is the scope of the district that we're looking at creating. If you go down to the bottom line, you'll see that the ending balance picture based on both of these is somewhere plus or minus around $300,000. So there's not a lot of money here. There's not a lot of students here. You have severe issues around creating an extremely marginal business enterprise. The quality of the education that can be offered to the students with this kind of resource, I think, is something that needs to be very, very carefully discussed. I very much appreciate Senator Cruz's coming into the process and trying to bring a deliberative process into being where these things can be discussed, because I do think that ultimately that's what's needed, is that there needs to be an arena formed where people can come together in a trusting and fact-based discussion and talk about what truly is best for the students of Canyonville and the students of the rest of the district. The Dash 1 amendments, I think, do have some very significant issues with them. They present 3 different ways to divide up the assets and the liabilities of the district, and it's not at all clear which path is supposed to be taken in this. I think that the other problem with this from a systemic point of view is that the ultimate decision ends up being made by a committee that has three people from the school district on it and three people from the Canyonville community on it. I honestly don't know if that kind of a group can reach a unanimous decision. But I know that you're going to hear a great deal from the citizens of Canyonville on this issue. This is a tremendous heartfelt issue for them, and I have tremendous respect for the feelings that they have here. I know that you're going to hear from the South Umpqua School District about the potential impact that this has to the remaining part of the district, and I wish you great good luck as you read through this issue. And I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. I just want to clarify that the information in pink where it says my estimates, those my is you. That's, are those your estimates?
I'm sorry?
On this chart, it's at the top, it says my estimates. Does that mean
my
you?
Estimates is feedback from the business agent
okay.
at the South Umpqua School District. So this is his take on what those numbers would should look like.
Okay.
And then this is his comment on the changes that he's made.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're going to be presented updated versions of this or additional information. This is just kind of where we left the conversation.
Okay. I think we've got someone. We have Chris Dodson here, Director of Fiscal Services. Or Davidson. Oh, see? I can't read that writing. All right. Well, I think there'll be somebody here to talk further about that. So any questions of Representative Morgan as she encourages us to wade into this very difficult issue? All right. Thank you,
Madam Chair.
I'll see you this afternoon. Okay, so let's get started. I'm going to bring people up three at a time. If I don't pronounce your name correctly, please correct me because I can't read some handwriting. John Osborne, James Siegel, and Frank Brott. And if you don't know each other, shake hands and introduce yourselves because I don't know.
No, I think these people know each other.
I think these sure. two.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Osborne, 1 Southwest Columbia, Portland, 97258. I'm an attorney for the Canyonville School Committee. Most of my legal practice involves representing local governments and particularly school districts. I've been doing that for quite a few years, and over the last many years, the legislature's worked very hard to try to bring down the number of school districts. We started out years ago with over 1,000 school districts, some of which were K through 6, K through 8, and then they'd have unified union high school districts. And since those efforts have been made, we've been able to reduce the number of districts, and certainly we're respectful of that tradition and that effort, and it's only on rare occasions, I think, that that doesn't really work on the ground. Oregon schools began by local people wanting to have a school that was close by so that their children could attend. Canyonville opened its school in 1863, and like all communities, it is centered around the children and where they go to school. 4 years ago at the legislative session, we were here on behalf of Ione School Committee in a very similar situation. And that was a situation where the school district, which was a consolidation, determined to bus the students to out of Ione, which would essentially destroy that community. The legislature we're thankful that the legislature gave Ione an opportunity to conduct its own school. We had an excellent program set out in that legislation for how to divide the assets and liabilities of the school district. And basically what we did and what we've proposed here is to divide it in accordance with the ADM or ADMR, the amount of money that goes to schools, and the assets, if the parties can't agree to it, could be determined by by the state superintendent or her designee. In the Ione case, it was a retired circuit judge who was appointed who made the division. And I can report to you that Ione School District is doing just fine. The community supports it. They have a very large trust fund that backs the school district, and that's the model that the people from Canyonville are looking to. We appreciate very much the efforts that Senator Cruz has put into first developing the bill and then trying, I think, by these amendments to promote some more community dialogue. The concerns that we have are that there be a clear method of dividing the assets, and we think the division in accordance with the ADMR of the respective communities would be appropriate way to do that. And it's also good to have the state superintendent to have the opportunity to make the decision if need be. The concern that Representative Morgan raised with the first set of amendments here is that you end up with a three-person committee from each side, and they get together and they form a six-person committee, and nobody ever creates a six-person board.
Well, obviously I do, but anyway.
Yeah, way to go.
I think it wasn't your idea. I mean, somebody made you do it. Anyway, it's an opportunity for deadlock, and in the event of a deadlock, nobody gets anything. Our preference would be that this legislature determine that the division be made. Our second choice would be that the matter go to the voters. The opportunity for a deadlock in which ends up in nothing happening would certainly be our last choice.
You know, it's fascinating you mentioned this, because the Management Labor Advisory Committee that makes all decisions about workers' comp issues is 5-5.
Uh-huh.
And the last point you just made, that nothing gets done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, that was my
your shot at Amlac.
I haven't done that in a while.
Okay, I'm going to I'll be happy to answer any questions, but I would like to have you have the opportunity to hear people from Canyonville who got up at 4:30 this morning to drive up here.
I got up earlier than that. All right, great. So we will hear next from you, sir, R.
I'm Dr. James Siegel from Canyonville. I'm the current chairman of the Canyonville School Committee. I want to thank you, Senator Walker, chair and committee, for the opportunity to testify today. I support the separation of Canyonville from the South Umpqua School District. I see this as the only means that our communities can move forward to address the needs and improvements of our schools. We have been in a deadlock for several years and been unable to move forward on any improvements. This past November, the South Umpqua School Board had a bond levy on the ballot for $20 million. This levy proposed to build a new middle school in Tri-City and to make some improvements and repairs to the high school. This measure failed, with 73% of the voters saying no. Our committee took a survey in Canyonville to determine the direction and support our community wanted to take after the closure of our middle school. We had 413 signed responses right here in this envelope. Of those, 406 were in favor of doing whatever it took to keep schools in Canyonville, even if this meant separating from South Umpqua. Six were not in favor of any options that involved separation, and one response was undecided. Five other members of the Canyonville School Committee will testify in support of separation from South Umpqua School District. thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. or Dr. Siegel. I appreciate you coming.
Good morning, Chair, Person Walker, members of the committee. My name is Frank Brott. I've lived in Canyonville for 42 years. 2003, I retired from South Umpqua School District after 38 years with the district. I'm here today as a member of the Canyonville School Committee. I support the passage of a measure that would allow for the separation of Canyonville from South Umpqua School District. I believe the only viable solution to the constant and continuing irreconcilable differences between Canyonville and South Umpqua is a legal separation voted by the legislature. The resulting Canyonville district would have, I believe, sufficient resources and building space to fund and house K-12 programs. I've outlined those resources and how they might be used in my written materials. Separation would allow both Canyonville and Myrtle Creek to move forward with the development of educational programs and facilities that best meet the needs of the two communities. We in Canyonville can continue to build on our history of academic excellence as exemplified by our non-qualification for reading first based on high state standardized test results. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any questions of this panel? All right, gentlemen, thank you. Next, we'll hear from Bob Deaton, Carol Malmay, and Alberta Pritchett.
Walker, members of the committee. Mine, Bob Deaton. I live at 561 Palisade Court in Canyonville. I was a member of the South Umpqua School Board from 1989 to 1993. I ran for the board to help keep our schools in Canyonville. For the past 25 years, various school boards have threatened to close Canyonville schools and move our children to Myrtle Creek. Canyonville has always fought it off by coming to the meetings in numbers and letting them know that it was not an option. This was one of the main issues while I served on the board, and it was again met with opposition from Canyonville. At that time, the board made a decision to never bring it up again. They decided that there is no amount of savings that could justify the disruption and division these actions would create within the district. Again, Canyonville is not a suburb of, nor is it a border, Myrtle Creek. They are two separate incorporated communities. Approximately 2 years ago, the threat to close our schools again started. This time, our numbers and attempts to find other solutions accomplished nothing. The board is determined to go forward with their plan. In the summer of 2006, buildings were boarded up, plans moved forward to close the junior high. In the fall, junior high students were expected to go to Myrtle Creek, but most of their parents elected to send them to neighboring charter schools. The current board administration of South Umpqua School District have adopted policies that led to students leaving the district. There has been no effort made to bring these children back. 25 years of wasted time and energy on the same issue. 25 years of wasted tax dollars. Just think about all the staff time and all the money that was spent over the years on this issue. 25 years of engineering and architectural fees paid for plans never used. 25 years of arguing, fighting, and anger. It's time to stop the waste. It's time for separation. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
We make it sound like a bad, bad marriage, Mr. Dean. All right. Well, we're not a divorce court, but we're kind of close to that sometimes. Okay, next.
Chair Walker, members of the Education Committee. I'm Carol Malmay, 890 South Main Street, Canyonville, Oregon.
Okay, Ms. Malmay, you don't have to get too close to the microphone. Okay. You can sit comfortably in your chair. 12 inches is good.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I'm a member of the Canyonville School Committee. I've given you in my packet some pictures of the school buildings in Canyonville. It shows that we're not talking about a one-room schoolhouse here. We're talking about some very nice buildings. Okay. And property. That Canyonville acquired the property and built our school buildings before joining the South Umpqua School District. It is unconscionable to us that five board members from another city can decide they want to sell our schools, take our money, and build schools in their city. If the people that voted to join districts in the first place had any idea this was a possibility, they never would have joined. To us, this is stealing from a hardworking community and tearing the very heart out of our city. We believe we can share services with other small districts and possibly save, help with the survival of those small districts around us. We think we could share administrative services and some teachers. We'd like to explore this possibility and possibly even be a model for other small districts so that they can keep their autonomy and their identity and stay in their own communities. We believe we can offer our children a wide variety of educational options by working together, and in doing so, help all of these small districts survive. No one wants another city to control how their schools are run, how their money is spent. This should be left to the local people. Statistics are showing that small schools are providing the best education. The drug issues we are facing today require closer family and friend contacts with our teens. They're a little less likely to try drugs if everybody around knows who they are. If having our teens in school at home saves any of them from the horrible fate of drugs, it's worth whatever it costs our town to have our own schools. It's also important for the economy of Canyonville. We've lived through the devastation of losing 90% of the timber industry. Losing our schools would be another huge economic blow. How can a city survive without families? Without schools, families will stop moving here. The only way we can be assured of saving our schools is to separate from South Umpqua School District. The citizens of Merle Creek also agree with us. It's just a few handful of people that don't. We plan to come back until this is accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nolme. These are the pictures that you gave us. Can you explain these? It says buildings at what will be the high school and junior high campus. So what is this building on the top?
That one was the junior high until the district moved them out this last year. Now they've converted it they moved our elementary children up there and boarded up our elementary
school. So elementary students are now in this building here. And then
originally, all those buildings housed our junior high and high school.
Oh, they were.
They were okay. Before we went together.
But when? How long ago was that?
1964.
Well, that was.
I also gave you a chronological history there, that shows the chain of events that took place in what year.
I see that here, and I'll try and look through it while we're talking and see if I have some questions. This one. I want to be clear, this is the elementary school that was boarded up?
Yes, and that sits on 13 acres at the end of a dead-end street.
Mm-hmm.
One side has a mountain, as you can see. The other side is backed up by Canyonville Christian Academy. And our elementary children, it's probably the safest place in the world you could hope for an elementary school. And they've moved them out of that building and up to the junior high building on Main Street.
Okay. And what do you know what's being done with this building now? It's just sitting there gathering dust?
We believe they're planning to sell it the minute it's been closed for a year.
It's been closed for how long?
They closed it in June, the end of last school year.
Okay. Is there some reason they need to hold on to it for a year, or you just don't know? Have they talked about it in budget meetings, what they're going to do?
They've talked about selling our schools.
Okay.
Sometimes they've talked about selling one and building onto one for K through 8, but our board members tell us that when we're not there, they don't talk about K through 8. They only talk about K through 5.
Okay. The second question, second area of questioning I have for you is, I think I heard you correct. You said you lost 90% of your revenue from timber?
No.
Did I hear that right?
I said that we lived through the devastation of losing 90% of the timber industry. The timber industry went down 90%.
Okay.
It didn't affect us quite 90%, probably.
Okay. So the reason that I wanted to make that clear is I'm wondering where you're going to get the revenues to operate this school district all by itself instead of being connected to South Umpqua. Do you have the tax base to support the school district?
We believe we do, and Frank Brott's figures there. He's very qualified.
I see that here.
We still have a viable community and a viable city.
Mm-hmm.
The economy, though, it's been brought up how the economy is going to be affected by taking students away from Rose Creek. We believe that Canyonville can manage its own schools better and their own money better and do a better job of it if we're on our own, and so can Myrtle Creek. Right now, all we are is a chain around each other's neck.
I did get a letter. It's one of the reasons I agreed to hear the bill, that there was some private fundraiser where you raised $23,000 to support this effort. My other question is, does the Cow Creek Tribe contribute any to the community school? Their foundation does.
To any school around the area.
Okay.
And they would definitely... If we were separate, they would still, I'm sure, support both schools.
Okay. I'd assume that. Mm-hmm. And do some of the tribal children go to the schools here? They don't have their own school, do they?
No, they go to our schools.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I assume that. Okay. Any questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A geography lesson, please. How far apart are Canyonville and Myrtle Creek, and how far are the students bused go to Myrtle Creek?
I believe the distance is actually about 10 miles. There's a range of mountains between us, so it feels like, and it's up the freeway. And there's a range of mountains that kind of divide Canyonville from Myrtle Creek.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, great. Then we will hear from our next guest.
Chairperson Walker, members of the committee, and other guests. I'm Alberta Pritchett from 491 Harrison Street, Canyonville, Oregon, with the Canyonville School Committee. And I support the separation of Canyonville schools from the South Umpqua District. The majority of the South Umpqua School Board are raping Canyonville schools to improve other schools in the district. Our two school board members have no voice, being outvoted 5-2 on all issues. We have no say about what happens in Canyonville. I've lived in Canyonville for over 50 years, had four children, all of who attended Canyonville and the South Umpqua High Schools. I was one of the young parents back in 1964 that voted for the consolidation of the high school only, with the assurance that other schools would never be closed. This promise was broken with the closure of our middle school. And this has caused negative effects for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students. They've lost their identity. No more Canyonville Tigers. Their school spirit has vanished from bright eyes and tender young hearts. They have no sense of belonging, which harms their self-esteem. They're unable to participate in after-school activities, no rides home afterwards, and 10 miles is too far to walk. Bus rides to and from school are longer. Participation in a classroom is limited because of the larger classes, and they have to compete to play sports. Our community suffers as well. Local schools are the nucleus of community activities. No more school plays, band concerts, school award ceremonies, soccer, volleyball, baseball, basketball, or football games to attend. These were always well attended, sometimes with standing room only. The community support for our Canyonville schools is absolutely awesome. These young students are our future. We want and deserve the right to protect them and give them the best opportunities available for them. Please help us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me ask you a question, Ms. Pritchett.
Mm-hmm.
You said the majority of the 7-member South Umpqua School Board, well, they're and you move on from there. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit pejorative, so I'm not going to state it. But you say two from Canyonville and five from Myrtle Creek and Tri-City. Mm-hmm. Are there only two positions on the school board for people from Canyonville?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some at-large positions, however, but those are held by Myrtle Creek or Tri-City.
Okay, but a Canyonville person could compete for the at-large position. But
One of them, I know. I'm not
one
sure.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we all know about elections here. Yes, sure, Mr. Deaton.
There are three positions that's at-large anyone within the district can run for. The trouble that we have is the same as with any large and small community. The larger have more numbers, and at any time they can outvote us. And so we have a very, very hard time ever getting anyone to be elected to any of the at-large positions. It has happened a few times, and at the best we've ever had is a 4-3 board. That's the best we've ever been able to accomplish. So we are pretty much at the mercy of the larger community.
Okay, and that's the comment that Ms. Pritchett made. Because of the way the school board has treated us, there are irreconcilable differences that cannot be fixed. Which brings us back to divorce court. Okay, thank you, all three of you, for getting up so early and coming up here. So I'll now hear from, I believe this is Gloria McBennis and Rick Richardson and Beverly Parsons. Oh, Beverly Parsons is on a panel. I just realized that. I'm not going to mix you with these folks. So we'll save you. Okay, so Gloria and Rick. Is there anyone else in support of this measure that is not neutral that wanted to be up here? Okay. He's neutral. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Gloria McGinnis, and I represent the Canyonville School Committee. I live at 450 Reynolds Street, and I have lived in Canyonville for 60 years, graduating from Canyonville High School in 1949. I was a judge for almost 30 years and mayor of our town for 5 years. I moved to Canyonville in my junior year of high school. I came from a school of 3,000 in the 10th to 12th grades. When I moved to Canyonville, there were approximately 200 students in the 1st through 12th grades. I really thought I was going to show them a thing or two. Well, they taught me. I was surprised all the teachers and students ended up from the first grade on knowing my name. I was part of a group. I was part of a family. And they were all a part of my life, and some of them still are. We all cared about each other and for each other. And times have not changed in our town. We're very close. We trust each other. As you can tell from the way people respond, Canyonville is special to everybody who lives there. However, the South Umpqua School Board has destroyed our trust with them, with their actions. You will hear from a board member how they are treated. In my copy of the speech, you can read another incident if you so choose. Canyonville is 1 year older than the state of Oregon. We celebrate our 150th anniversary in 2008. Our children were always so important to the people of Canyonville that we formed one of the first schools in the county and the state. It is the heart of our community. So please do not allow a school board to break the faith and take our children and our schools from us. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McGinnis, and thank you for being such a pillar of the community. All of you have testified today.
It's a good community.
It is. Are you retired from being a judge now?
Yes.
So you're doing great and wonderful things for yourself these days, right?
for our town. Yes.
Okay, very good.
Madam Chair, she's always been a troublemaker.
I would love to see that yearbook from 1949 that describes what you would be doing.
I was a cheerleader.
Oh, there you go. All right. Mr. Richardson.
Hi. My name's Rick Richardson. I reside at 429 North Main in Canyonville. Thank you, Senator Walker and committee members, for hearing my little spiel here. I'd also like to add that I am not a member of the Canyonville School Committee. I am a current board member, but I do not represent the board or other board members' views. The board has not discussed or given an opinion on Senate Bill 462 at any public meeting. I'm a local business owner in Canyonville. I worry that we will also lose our K through 5 in the future. The local Chamber of Commerce worries that without our schools, we won't attract young couples with children to make a good mix of community members, and that would have a devastating effect on our local economy. Children need a sense of belonging, and attending the school and the community to live in and after-school activities helps to achieve this, building strong, responsible, caring citizens for the future. Being bused to another town loses a lot of these opportunities. 5 board members from a different area and community vote and decide about our schools. This is part of the problem of losing our schools. We love and support our schools, but people from a different community decide that needs to be closed. Is this right? Myself and many others don't think so. We love and want our schools back. I know that our community can and will support our schools in Canyonville once we have them back. Thank you for your support, time, and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson. Any questions from the committee? Yes, we do have one. Just sit down just a minute. Don't be in such a hurry, Ms. McGinnis. Senator Morse, we're not going to let you get away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question focuses around the recent election, November 7, 2006. The Canyonville City Precinct and the Canyonville County Precinct, do those two precincts represent the area of Canyonville that you want to preserve?
Yes.
Okay, and I guess my question is, the yes votes were 16%. The total of all of the district was 27% yes. So you had a huge number of negative responses from your proposed district. Was this in response to the general plan, and it was a
protest
vote? The
negative responses were because of the fact of our school being closed.
Okay, so that's why
it's
so negative. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, and I see a letter from you in my file, Ms. McGinnis, previously. Let me ask this question. Charles Malden is not here, but he did send me a letter, and he indicated that when the South Umpqua administration closed our middle school last fall, two-thirds of the middle school students left the district to attend Days Creek's charter school. We want these students and our school back. So I guess I'd ask Mr. Richardson, since you're on the school board, can you tell me about that? Did you lose some students to the charter school?
Yes, I think approximately 75 kids are enrolled at Days Creek Charter School. That was the parents' choice, and I never did, as a board member, I chose not to advise any of the parents what direction to go. It was their own decision. It actually surprised me that many chose to go to another district, but it happened.
So that's not in the South Umpqua School District. It's
no.
In the other school district.
They were able to do that because Days Creek is a charter school.
Okay. That's my next question.
Okay.
Is there a charter school in the South Umpqua School District, and why can't this become a charter school district?
There is not a charter school in the South Umpqua School District at this time. When I first ran for board, I was opposed to separation. I thought that I could make a difference and work things out. I, on two or three occasions, even at budget meetings, brought up the fact of leaving the Canyonville Junior High open for another year and making it a charter school. But I was It was flat turned down by the administration at that time. I might add that Beth Parsons was not our superintendent at that time. But I brought it up, and it was, I mean, I was trying to keep our schools, keep the district together, and that was one of the ideas that I had, but now it seems like we're trying to close the door after the horse is already out.
Okay, well, those are good questions that we'll be asking the superintendent. Okay, any other questions of our guests here? All right, thank you both very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, Beverly Parsons, Chris Davidson, let's see, Jeff Johnson, and then we have Greg Falk, but I don't have room for four people at the table, so I'll take three of you, and then the fourth one I'll take by yourself. Okay, welcome. Introduce yourself, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beverly Parsons, and I am the proud superintendent of the South Umpqua School District. Thank you for the privilege of speaking to you today on behalf of our students and families. I also have been involved with this school district and lived in these communities for 60 years. I would like to give you a little bit of history about our district that might familiarize you with the current situation. Our school district has a current enrollment of about 1,725 K-12 students in three distinct small communities within a close geographic range. Our enrollment has declined over the past few years, but is beginning to show some growth in the unincorporated area of Tri-City, which is most central to district boundaries. We have three small elementary schools, one in each community. We have Coffinberry Middle School in Myrtle Creek, which has 380 students, and South Umpqua High School, located in Tri-City, with an enrollment of about 530 students. The South Umpqua School District is one of the more successful districts in rural Southern Oregon. Our Oregon report card ratings are evidence of the high standards we hold for students and staff. All our elementary schools received a strong state report card rating and met AYP. Our middle school has also received a strong rating for several years in a row. Our high school was rated satisfactory this last year and had a low dropout rate of 2.8%. Many surrounding small districts come to us for guidance and support in their endeavors. We have worked hard to achieve our success in spite of yearly budget cuts. Until this year, in addition to the K-5 Canyonville Elementary School, which still exists, we also had a small middle school in the town of Canyonville with an enrollment of about 75 students in grades 6 through 8. For several years, we had struggled to keep all our schools operating as best we could. This required taking from all other students in the district to continue to operate Canyonville Middle School. It has also been at the expense of building maintenance and repair. All district buildings are antiquated, inefficient to operate, and expensive to maintain. After much thought, consideration, and emotional conflict, our school board made the decision that we could no longer afford two middle schools. They remained solid in their conviction to keep all elementary students in their own communities, but felt the middle school students would benefit from combining programs and sharing highly qualified teachers. Following the decision to close Canyonville Middle School, the school board made a decision to attempt passing a bond levy to build a new middle school in a central location on property owned by the district. The goal was to have a centrally located school that all three communities could be proud of and that would be efficient to run. The Canyonville Schools Committee spent much time, effort, and money and were successful in defeating the bond levy. The school board and district administration have made several good faith attempts to build trust with the Canyonville group since that time and provide options for students. The board suggested they write a charter to obtain additional funds to operate a middle school. At first, we were told they had been working on one. Later, they said they were not interested. We offered then to work with them and write the charter. Once again, they were not interested. Recently, we figured out a way to provide the space and offered a self-contained sixth-grade classroom to add to their K through 5 elementary, if parents were interested. Out of 26 students, who are fifth-grade students now, only 9 responded favorably to that setting. Others were either undecided or were planning to send their sixth graders to our middle school or to nearby Days Creek Charter School. Both are viable options for Canyonville students. Parents were highly encouraged by the Canyonville School Committee to send their kids to Days Creek Charter School. Days Creek Charter School purchased a bus specifically to come into our school district to pick up those students. We are empathetic and understand the concerns of the business community in Canyonville, but we are charged with providing an equitable education for all students in our district with the funds we have. This raises the concern I have with Senate Bill 462. Throughout the state, small districts are struggling to make it one more year. The No Child Left Behind law requires a highly qualified teacher for every subject, every period, every day. This is not difficult at the elementary level, but a district the size of South Umpqua struggles to hire sufficient personnel to meet those requirements at the secondary level. For example, we used to hire science teachers with degrees in science. Now we must hire science teachers who have specialized expertise in the separate areas of biology, chemistry, physical science, and so on, even if those classes are very small. If our district is made smaller by the separation of Canyonville into their own district, it will be increasingly difficult to provide a quality education for our secondary students. It is impossible for districts the size of Canyonville. Many of them have resorted to online classes. I believe this is a less than optimum replacement for quality instruction. Susan Castillo's recent superintendent's update talks about No Child Left Behind requirements in relation to small districts. It calls attention to the tall order of attaining teachers that are highly qualified in various subject areas. In this message, the superintendent of Falls City, a district about the same size a Canyonville district would be, is quoted as seeking answers to this exact problem, which seems insurmountable to him. At first glance, a charter school may seem like the answer, but we are surrounded by small districts that have resorted to charter schools or becoming charter districts in order to buy a little time. When the extra money provided for the charter runs out, their enrollment is the same, and they are still in the same predicament, having just prolonged the agony of closing schools. While we are still amenable to considering and participating in a charter option, I'm not really convinced this is the answer, especially if the people of Canyonville feel forced rather than enthusiastic about a charter school in their community. Also, we have spent considerable money over the past year updating and making needed repairs on what is now Canyonville Elementary School. Opening a charter middle school would require a great deal more district money to make their other old building operable, as charter money cannot be used to upgrade a facility. There is currently no facility in Canyonville that would be at all viable for a high school campus. Another important issue I would like you to consider is the precedence which would be set by the passage of this bill. If Senate Bill 462 is successful, I believe there will be similar retaliation toward every district that is forced to close a school due to lack of money or whenever a group finds fault with the priorities set for the wise and prudent spending of state school funds. If the separation of our currently successful district is the only way we can move forward in a positive direction, I am not necessarily opposed to that. I think, however, that the ability for a Canyonville school district to survive and provide a quality education in today's venue has not been addressed thoroughly enough. Thank you for your time and thoughtful consideration of the negative impact the passage of this bill might have on all our students.
Thank you, Ms. Parsons. I need to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. In the letter I received from the Canyonville School Committee, there's no date on it, but it was sometime early in the session. They indicate down here that the school district has violated the original agreement. 1964, when the schools consolidated, it was agreed that only the high school would be consolidated. The other schools would remain where they were in the local towns. The board closed Canyonville Middle School. What agreement are they speaking of? Do you have some legal agreement?
We're not sure. Mr. Davidson has the paperwork from that era when the consolidation happened. I was in high school at that time, and it has always been everybody's understanding that it was a consolidated district, not just consolidating the high schools.
Okay, well, I'd sure like to see some paperwork on that.
Madam Chairperson, Chris mm-hmm. Davidson, Director of Fiscal Services for South Umpqua.
Okay.
If you take my thick packet here and flip to the very back few pages,
what
you'll find the documentation I received from the Oregon Department of Education that is regarding the consolidation of the two school districts. It's about the back 7 or 8 pages.
Mm-hmm. Looks like something from archives.
And when you get to about the fourth page in, it discusses the use of the facilities of the combined district, and it says that maximum of use be made of present school plants is the discretion of the school board of the administrative district.
Okay,
hang on just a second.
I want to make sure we're all on the same page up here. So it's under Part 3. It's that form SDRA8E. And the pages aren't numbered, but he's correct. It's 4 pages in. So, colleagues, do you all have that? It's on, take this big, large packet and go to the very back.
Okay.
And then from the back, it is 1, 2...
7 pages in from the
back. 7 pages in from the back. That's the easiest way to deal with that. And this is my plug for archives and Secretary of State. That's why it's so valuable to preserve our records. So now I think we're all on the same page. So what you were reading was the very bold type that says that maximum use be made of the present school plants in the discretion of the school board of the administrative district.
Correct. And so this, you know, they're under the impression that at some point in time a promise was made that the consolidation was only to happen with the high school and no other consolidations would ever take place, that their K through 8 would remain in perpetuity. However, this documentation obviously shows that the district had discretion going forward to use the buildings as they saw fit. I mean, obviously no board 40 years ago could bind a board today, not knowing what the circumstances would be down the road, to what could be done with facilities in the future.
Okay. That answers that question. And then, Mr. Davidson, did you have any other comments you wanted to make?
I do have a few.
Okay.
I may.
Okay. We have 3 more people signed up to testify. We'll go a little bit after 10. I will not, let me take a moment to say, I will not be hearing Senate Bill 378 today. We're going to carry that over to Thursday. But this committee closes at 10, but we've been known to go later because these last 2 weeks are pretty difficult for us to get everything heard. So go ahead, Mr. Davidson.
Yeah, I appreciate the extra time allowed for this. I will try to keep it brief. Again, I am the business manager for the current South Umpqua School District. Though I have not been in the Myrtle Creek, Canyonville area, my family is from there. My mother was the last graduating class of Canyonville High School before the consolidation happened. My uncle was one of the first graduating people from South Umpqua's new high school. So I do have some family ties to the area and to the district. As has been discussed, you know, the issue here before us came about because as the enrollment has declined in our district over the last few years with roll-up costs and everything else, we've been forced into budget cuts. Going into the 06-07 budgeting time, we were looking at a $400,000 budget deficit, and we were trying to find ways outside of the classroom to address this. Over time, maintenance has been the main focus of those cuts. It was, you know, keep the money in the classroom and unfortunately let the building suffer. We had reached the point that we couldn't continue to do that. The buildings were suffering enough as it was, so we had to start beginning to look into the classroom at what could be cut. After considering all the different options before us, those brought forward by budget committee members, community members, and board members, the consolidation of the middle school seemed the most viable. It saved the largest amount of money, having had the minimal amount of impact on the fewest students, and allowed us to save almost $250,000. So it was a huge chunk of that $400,000. At the same time, consolidation brought Canyonville students to Coffinberry Middle School, which gave them opportunities for new electives that had not been offered at Canyonville Middle School, and extracurricular activities that also were not available at Canyonville Middle School. So there was expanded student opportunities. The students were looking at about a 10 to 15 minute bus ride, more or less, up I-5 the entire time. So that did not seem like a huge imposition on the students compared to students who live outside the Myrtle Creek area who currently drive 45 minutes to an hour to get on a bus to get to middle school. So other students in the district suffer a much greater burden getting to school than the Canyonville students would have. So that's essentially how we got here today.
Well, and Mr. Davidson, while that all sounds very practical, I'm struggling here to find my notes here from, I think it was Ms. Pritchard. She talked about tender hearts and, you know, how they've lost their sense. Here we are. They've lost their sense of school spirit. They're not able to participate in after-school activities because there's no rides home afterwards. So how do you respond to that?
Well, unfortunately, you know, like I said, there are students who have to ride a bus for an hour. So if they want to participate in after-school activities, somehow their parents find a way to make it happen. Canyonville being 15 minutes away obviously had a less of a burden to try to make participation happen for their kids. I mean, unfortunately, you know, that's the demise you face when you face a decreasing budget with declining enrollment. I mean, you can't make everybody happy. You can't give everyone everything. And you have to make the least painful impacts you possibly can.
Well, that's probably not an answer that they want to hear, but I appreciate the answer. All right. Okay, let's hear. Are you Mr. Johnson? Okay, let's hear from you, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in order to save time, I'm not going to repeat kind of what they have already said. I would just bring up a few concerns that we have with the amendments as well as what Representative Morgan and John Osborne brought up. Obviously, the six-person board we don't feel would be very effective. The assets and liability division, we feel like there's contradictory asset and liability disbursements throughout the bill. We do dispute and would like to discuss the percentage of assets and liabilities that would be divided up. We feel like it's more in the 16%, 15% range as far as if that was to take place. Currently we have moved the DLC program, disability program, over to the Canyonville school because of room in some of the other buildings, and we feel like that's a district program. So as far as subsection 13 that says that all Canyonville teachers would go or have the option to go to the Canyonville school district, we feel like they should, that one being a district position, shouldn't have the option because it has Tri-City, Myrtle Creek, and has traveled around the district throughout the entire district as kind of the overall district disability classes and that sort of thing. So, and one of the other things I would say is subsection 10, the boundaries board and that sort of thing, we would like to at least consider the ability that the boundaries go back to the way they were prior to the merger. Prior to the merger of the two school districts, the history of the boundaries there. So,
okay.
Other than that, I didn't introduce myself probably correctly, but Jeff Johnson, I'm vice chair of the school board. Live at 383 Meadow Lane, Myrtle Creek, Oregon 97457, and I just would reiterate that this has not been an easy issue at all. If it was based directly on emotion, I would have voted to have both middle schools stay open forever. What we had is two declining enrollment middle schools. We had buildings that need major repairs, and it made more sense and affected the students in my opinion, the least effective way or the least negative way to combine the middle school. Some of our other options were to pull full-time teachers and full-time teaching assistants out of our elementary schools. And when weighing all those options out that current year, I felt like this would affect those kids the least negative impact of all the options that we had at that time.
Was the vote on the board, on the school board, was it a unanimous vote to do what you've done?
The consolidation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a 5-2.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much
for coming up. Two more folks to testify, Greg Falk and Jim Proctor. And then we're going to close this hearing down. Please note that the bill I have to hold over till Thursday is my own bill. Okay.
I'm Greg Falk. I live in Canyonville, Oregon, 361 Bramblewood Lane. And I'm a family physician there and a current school board member. Fortunately, my term is about to expire in July. I understand.
Are you running for re-election?
No.
Okay.
I thank you for listening to us, Senator Walker and committee members. I understand your reluctance to hear, discuss a bill that would create more school districts in Douglas County. In our instance, we have 14 school districts approximately in our county. If Canyonville was to become a school district, seven of the school districts would be smaller than Canyonville, seven would be larger. And, you know, I've talked to some senators here, and I realize, and I certainly agree with, I think we need school reform where we reduce the number of superintendents and business managers to a more number that would maybe even just be one superintendent and one business manager in Douglas County. I certainly agree that the school board is trying to do the very best they can to return South Umpqua to its maybe former glory days right after the merger. In the 1960s and 1970s, South Umpqua, they tell me, was the place to be and was a really good school district. And I certainly agree that that's what we want to try to accomplish here and do the best thing for kids. But I believe South Umpqua is in difficult times. You've heard testimony today that the middle school was closed to save money, and I believe that it was. But in, you know, all end result of all of that resulted in loss of about 100 kids from last year mm-hmm. to this year, which resulted in a negative loss, which is going to result in negative problems.
Let me back up, because that's an extremely important point you've just made. The district has lost 100 kids because they all went to Day's Creek.
Not all, but some went to Riddle, some went to Day's Creek,
okay.
Some homeschooled.
So the district now has lost 100 ADMW. So it's impacted their bottom line.
And the problem that I see as we move forward over the next 4 or 5 years, that if the students continue to exit, and it would be my guess, I have no crystal ball, but my guess that we will lose another 125 kids over the next 5 years, that we'll be down another 125 kids, which will severely affect the school district every year. It's going to be a repetitive thing.
So when Mr. Johnson just testified, I think it was Mr. Johnson, that they were facing... Mr. Davidson, it was Mr. Davidson. He said that you were facing a $400,000 budget shortfall, and by closing the middle school, you saved $250,000.
That was the projection, but because they were going to close the school and reduce some teachers and so forth, I think we ended up keeping all the teachers except the one that retired. But so that was the projection, but in reality was we lost, instead of, if that would be, if all the students from Canyonville had gone to Coffinberry, then that would have worked out. Probably there would have been some savings, maybe a $200,000 savings. But in the end result is the students left the school district.
That's what I want to know.
And so what happens then is we had about a $500,000 or $600,000 loss in the school district. So we projected, we made a decision trying to save $200,000. We end up losing a half a million.
Well, that was a fascinating decision with a strange outcome. That's really important, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I just think we needed to hear what the effects of that. Sometimes when we make decisions like that, we think it'll have one outcome and it has a completely different one.
And that's what I'm afraid for the South Umpqua School District, that if we keep the situation together, really, we've really not passed a significant bond levy since 1964. We had about a half a million or $1 million bond levy that was passed in 88 to build the student center, the student area in Myrtle Creek, but the last bond levy went down 3-1, and part of that was generated by the negative emotion But really, the school district, and I'm really not, I've lived in Canyonville all my life. I was born in Canyonville in 1964, but really have not been involved in public education. While I grew up there, I didn't go to any public schools. Just the last 7 or 8 years I've been involved. But always those years, as a family physician, I went to a lot of my kids' games and friends' games and patients' games, and it seemed like the South Umpqua School District, to me, suffered from significant ownership problems during the 90s, all through the 90s. We go to other smaller school districts. There was a lot of ownership. Riddle, Glendale, Dace Creek seemed like they had a lot of ownership. South Umpqua seemed like they had the least amount of ownership. And I attributed that. No, I had no agenda, but I just thought, you know, it's two communities. Nobody really owns this school. And I think that's a big problem. I think there's huge community support in Myrtle Creek. I know there's huge community support in Canyonville, and I think by forcing these two school districts, former school districts, to stay together, I think we create a problem where there's all this positive energy that we need for kids is really not coming forth. I think it's like somebody else's problem to fix it, and that, you know, just doesn't ever really work. Mm-hmm. Canyonville recently built a fire department. They passed a $1 million bond levy by a 70% margin to, you know, do a bond to raise their, you know, to put a fire department in there. I believe that if they had a school that they were supporting, I think they would pass a $2 or $3 or $4 million bond by the same margin. I think Myrtle Creek may too, if they had a bond levy. So I think that we have a problem with no ownership. We have a problem that's going to extend out over the next 4 or 5 years, maybe more. I think eventually what will happen, in my own view of things, is if we lose 125 more kids over the next 5 years, I think eventually we'll close the elementary school in Canyonville, which will further dissatisfy the citizens of Canyonville and make things even more difficult. Right now, if you go to fifth grade in Canyonville, and then most of your friends and former people are going to another school, I think that exodus will follow. I think the best strategy for South Umpqua is to close the elementary, actually, and integrate those kids in kindergarten when they may follow on through the school system. And I think that will happen. I don't know that I'm going to be off the board. I'm not going to vote on it. I'll be thankful not to be there. But I just worry about the South Umpqua School District, the viability of it, if something doesn't happen. As difficult as divorce is, a struggling marriage is maybe worse, and there's a time for a divorce. And I think this might be the time.
Thank you for those words of wisdom. Thank you for your commitment to the community and both a physician to the community and being on the school board. I appreciate it. Okay, Mr. Proctor, I've had a lot of communication from you. Please don't read this page and a half of single space small type, because we need to close down this hearing, so I'm going to give you about 3 minutes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to testify, and I apologize for the confusion. When my college students show up 5 minutes late, they've missed the all-important announcements. I showed up 5 minutes late and missed the all-important sign-in.
All right.
That is my fault.
State your name for the
my
record.
My name is Jim Proctor, and I reside in Portland as a full professor at Lewis and Clark College. I grew up in Canyonville, and I've dedicated time and land I own in South Douglas County to K-12 educational benefit. My Canyonville classmates, member of the high school class of 1976, now serve as engineers, educators, and city administrators. I can readily understand why this community is now calling for its own K-12 district. Actions of the last several years, as you've heard, have disempowered Canyonville, as one educational decision after the next was made without due consultation. Yet, is this the right solution? I'd like to suggest 3 criteria to guide your decision. There is debate over whether or not a Canyonville district would be financially viable, and this is one important criterion. But the second concerns quality of education, and we must scrutinize the claim that bigger is educationally better. As this committee knows, the overwhelming evidence emanating from universities and think tanks, like the Rural School and Community Trust, is that the opposite is true. No matter how economically efficient a supersized school may appear at first glance, the educational picture can be a far different one. Then there's a third criterion focusing on the community itself. Schools draw from, and as you've heard, sustain communities. Canyonville fears not just the loss of its schools, which has already happened, but the inevitable loss of its sense of community, thus its request for a greater degree of self-determination. So I would recommend that your committee carefully evaluate the financial, educational, and community ramifications, both of passing Senate Bill 462 and of legislative inaction on Senate Bill 462. Yes, there are certainly potential risks in creating a new district, but the risks entailed in the South Umpqua School District's recent course of action are real, not potential. We have already witnessed their financial, educational, and community impacts. I support Senate Bill 462 not because it is necessarily the best option of all possible worlds, but because it is the best option of those we have before us today. Thank you again for your time and commitment.
Thank you, Mr. Proctor. Any questions? All right. Thank you both. Well, I think what I'm going to do here is, Senator Cruz, I'm going to ask you to do yeoman's work. You've only got a short period of time. I think you're going to get together with some folks and try to solve this issue in one way or another. And we'll carry it over to a work session on Thursday and see where we can go from here. I appreciate the comments of the committee that sent me notes, and we've certainly been reading all the material. I really appreciate everyone's effort to come here and tell us what you think, and all your commitment to your community. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 462 and carry the work session over to Thursday. And I am going to carry over Senate Bill 378 to Thursday as well. And Ms. Richardson, we're starting at 7:30. 7:30, colleagues, sorry. Go to bed early the night before.
No problem.
Okay.
And stay late that day, too.
And we'll stay late
that
day as well.
We're hearing from C that evening.
Oh, that's right. We have the Thursday evening hearing from 6 to 8 on the Metolius bill. Holy cow.
That's all because of Senator Westland, I believe.
Yeah. So please make sure you have lots of sleep and you are well-sustained food-wise. And with that, thank you all. We're adjourned.